Good morning to each of you. I greet you in the name of the one who does all things well. Doesn't always feel like it sometimes, but we choose faith in God even when it doesn't seem like things are going well. I want to take this opportunity to thank you as a congregation for the gifts and cards and so forth that show up in our mailboxes and in our vehicles from time to time. I don't always remember to do that, but I thought about that as I was preparing this morning. Thank you. Those are appreciated. Maybe we don't always get it shared, get it said, but they are appreciated. As I thought about the events of the past week here, we had a death of one in our midst, or at least connected to a family in our midst, and we had a marriage. A joyous occasion. We've had both. We've had our share of both. The wise man wrote in Ecclesiastes 7:2, he said, "It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart." I was driving home, I believe, Friday from work, and I was pondering what to preach this morning, and thought about the death of John Hollinger, and just God laid it on my heart to preach a message on grief this morning. So the title of the message is Understanding and Relating to Grief. Now, I don't know how many of you knew Brother John very, very well. I, of course, grew up there, and he was, I think I was in second grade when the Hollinger family showed up at that Honeybrook where I grew up. And family's been a part of my life ever since. Of course, the Leola family, who would know Brother Josh and Carla and their family, as one of John's children. And there have been other deaths that have touched our church family over the years, and we could go through and name all of them, but I won't do that. Romans 5:12 says, "Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned." And so sin brought death. And I think Genesis, we could look at the account of Genesis a little closer, and I'm not going to do that. But death began with Adam and Eve, with the sin of Adam and Eve. And all of us have sinned, and so that curse has been passed upon us as well, to all except Jesus himself. And that cycle has continued. Babies are born in all their cuteness and innocence and potential, and they grow up and they start going to Sunday school and they start going to day school. They become adolescents, they become youth, they marry and are given in marriage, they have children, they grow old and die. And that cycle just continues decade after decade and century after century for thousands of years. I realize not everyone fits exactly into that pattern the way I laid it out, but that's the general pattern. There's some that die young and some that die middle age, so forth. 1 Peter 1:24, "For all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man is the flower of grass. The grass withereth, and the flower thereof falleth away." I had to think about that at the wedding yesterday. I would remember the father of the bride from many years ago and see him at the wedding. And bald-headed and white-haired. I remember him. A lot of my memories of him go back to just pretty much a youth. Yes, eventually we grow old and we get white-haired and gray-haired, and it comes on us awfully, awfully quick at times. And life comes to an end. Death marches into our life unwelcomed, and we're left with grief. And I realize in some situations, death is a measure of relief, but it can also be, it also brings grief. Turn with me to John chapter 11 for a text. We've taken most of our thoughts from this passage here, very familiar passage of Jesus and Lazarus. Perhaps for you as young people and maybe young marrieds and so forth, perhaps this seems like a strange subject to tackle on a Sunday morning. But as I considered this topic and these thoughts, and as I dug into it a little deeper, I realized that grief goes way beyond the death of a loved one. And grief can touch us in many, many different ways. And we'll look at that psalm a little bit as we a little bit later here in the message. But I just want you to think about this. While most of my thoughts are somewhat around the context of the death of a loved one, it really, really is much, much broader than that. And you can apply a lot of these things where it fits. John chapter 11, verse 1. Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus, of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When he had heard therefore that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that he saith to his disciples, Let us go into Judea again. His disciples said unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought he had spoken of taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus said unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent that ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. And then said Thomas, which was called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, Let us go, that we may die with him. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. Many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. But I know that even now whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, Thy brother shall rise again. Martha said unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? She saith unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, The Master is come, and he calleth for thee. And as soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then, which were with her in the house, and comforted her when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, She goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And they said, Where have ye laid him? They said, Say unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, Behold, how he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man which have opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? Oh, maybe I'll... For the sake of time, I'll stop reading there, but we know the rest of the story. Verse 38, Jesus, therefore, again groaning in him, came to the grave where Lazarus was, laying dead for 4 days. And Jesus felt, it seemed almost like Jesus laid his manhood, his humanity aside here, and became deity, and spoke to Lazarus and told him to come out of the grave, and he came forth. This miraculous miracle of Christ to bring the dead person back to life. What would that have been like to have been there and watched this? Try to put yourself in the shoes of Mary or Martha, or the group of Jews that were there with her, with the sisters. What must this have been like? 4 days. this body was in the tomb, and they don't do the body preparations that they do today. 4 days. And to hear Jesus say something like this, and to watch this person come out of the grave, would have been something that I suppose those people would never have forgotten. Just a few thoughts from this passage. This John is the only one that has recorded this story. Why that is, I'm not exactly sure. But in chapter 12, it does say that some of the Jewish authorities were rather disturbed by this, and they wanted to put Lazarus back to death because of what the influence and the testimony and the story that went out from this. I'm not sure what they thought that was going to prove. If Jesus could raise him once, he certainly could raise him again. But hatred is blinding, and so they thought maybe they should put Lazarus back to death, because many of the Jews were believing on Jesus because of this. And so perhaps the Epistle of John was written at a later date than the other Gospels. It was written at a later date, so perhaps that danger was past, and so John was ready to write this. I'm not sure. That's one possible idea. John records this story of this resurrection of this man Lazarus from the dead. Verse 5. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Now, it's that little verse there is significant to me, because I think from the disciples it would have been obvious by this point that Jesus loved everyone. Yes, he spoke harshly at times, and he spoke with directness at times, and he scolded at times. But overall, his life was a life of sharing of love. And it's significant to me that this love was apparently extra special, or extra close, perhaps. It was significant enough that the writer here notes this here in verse 5. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Jesus loved everyone, but yet this seems like a closer love, almost of family and kin. And this circle included these two sisters. Now, the Jews believed that the soul remained at time of death, the soul remained near the body for 3 days. For 3 days, in the hope of returning back to the body. This was what the Jews believed, as I understood. So significantly, Jesus waited how many days to come? It says it right here in what I read. 4. He waited 4 days. Past that 3-day threshold, when it, according to their belief system, it would have been impossible now for this to have happened. I think that's significant. Jesus was intent on showing who he was, that he had power over death and the grave. So he waited till all earthly hope was past, and then worked his miracle. Verse 17 mentions, gives that verse of, or the note of the 4 days. Interesting to note the reproach that Martha and Mary both gave Jesus, in almost identical fashion. Verse 21, Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." In verse 32, Mary comes and she said, "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." I wonder, were these two talking about this as they waited for Jesus? They had sent for Jesus to come, and Jesus didn't come. Is it possible they talked about this between them? It's very possible, because both seem to have the same thought. And Jesus, in his humanity here, as he sees the grief of the two sisters and the Jews around him, he says in verse 35, this is just two words, the shortest verse in the Bible, that Jesus wept. The creator of the world, the man of mankind, the one who could heal anything, the one who could raise the dead to life, the one who could make the blind see, was weeping. I'm not sure what that looked like, to see Jesus weeping. Why would Jesus weep? He had the power to have healed Lazarus, Lazarus, and I believe he came with the intention and understanding that he was coming to restore Lazarus to life, and yet he wept as he saw the pain and suffering and grief of the people that surrounded him, his sisters and the Jewish. I'm not sure if this was people from the community, if this was people from the I'm not sure who those Jews were that were around them. But Jesus here wept at the grief that he saw. This man that could do everything reduced to tears. And John so eloquently writes these two words that Jesus wept. Number one, moving on here, as we think of grief, understanding and relating to grief. Grief comes because of loss. Death of a loved one is a loss. But grief can come from other losses as well. It could be a business that failed, a business venture that failed. It could be a financial loss. It could be a friendship that fell apart. And there could be various hopes and dreams that didn't come out, that didn't come to pass, that didn't work out the way we wanted them to. And these are all measures, these are all aspects of grief. Loss of limbs or health. Of course, the death of a loved one. But grief comes because of loss. Now, I suppose I can inadvertently lose various things, and I'm not going to waste a whole lot of time worrying or grieving or sorrowing over them. Things that I don't consider much value. I suppose a mouse could get in my house and get in a trap and his life would perish, and I wouldn't really grieve over that because I don't consider that a loss. I guess it's a loss, but it's not anything I consider of value. But my point is that the greater value we place on something, the greater our sense of loss, and then grief comes along with that. In the early 2000s, a man by the name of James Howells from North Newport, Wales, United Kingdom, mined about $9 million worth of Bitcoin. I don't understand that whole digital currency thing. I'm not sure how you mine Bitcoin. Probably somebody here understands that. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. But in August of 2013, he mistakenly left a hard drive in the trash that his then partner took, and it went out the door in the trash truck, I presume, and ended up in the landfill. As of today, that's worth about $800 million because of the inflation of Bitcoin. So here in this landfill is, and he thinks he knows which one it is a hard drive that if he could get to, has the key to his $800 million worth of Bitcoin. And he has gone to great lengths, this man has, to try to regain it back. He offered to the city council that if they would let him excavate the landfill, he would share 25% of his recovered Bitcoin with the city council. They refused his offer. Since that, and I think this, as I understand, this offer is pending right now, he has offered to buy the landfill from the, I guess how we would say maybe county here. I'm not sure what it is over in the United Kingdom, but if I understand correctly, that offer is still open and has been unresolved. But I think I can significantly correctly state that to James Howells, he considered this loss to be something of significant value to the point that he is willing to buy a landfill in order to dig it up and try to recover this hard drive that he thinks has the key to his $800 million. Now, that's a different type of grief or a different level of grief than someone that has lost a child or a father or mother or parent or a spouse. But it's still an aspect of grief. Our grief comes in measure with the value we place on our loss. And I think if we look at this story here, back to what we read, Lazarus was a dear friend of Jesus. It says Jesus loved him specifically. And so we see Jesus weeping at the death of his friend. So again, things we lose that we consider of value, and the higher value we place in them, the greater our understanding or the intensity of our grief. Number two, grief is intensified by the finality of death, thinking especially of a loss of a loved one. You know, some losses we have the hope of recovering. James Howells believes there's still hope of recovering his hard drive. He's still intent on trying to get in there and find that. I don't know how you would dig up a landfill and find a hard drive. That, to me, seems already impossible. But there is, I suppose, a measure of hope in him recovering that. But financial losses, we have some hope of recovering. Friendships, we have some hope of recovering. Health, we have some hope of recovering. And with those hopes, the measure of grief is reduced. But with death, there is a change that is irreversible and final. And that brings grief. Yes, it's final. Yes, we believe that God can raise the dead to life, and this story bears that out. But only rare occasions has God chosen to do that. We accept death as final this morning. And we don't pray that God brings a loved one back to life. At least I never have. Maybe I'm unique in that, but I don't pray that God will bring a dead person back to life. I suppose we could have a discussion of whether we should or not. We often quote this, when there's life, there's hope. But you know, the opposite is also true. When there's death, there is no hope left on this earth. Now, there is hope in the future with heaven. Don't misunderstand me. But we understand death to be final. And King David himself accepted this and understood this. When his son with Bathsheba, his child with Bathsheba perished, and died, David said, "While the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, who can tell whether God will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead, wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me." David understood this. This is final. And that increases our measure of grief as we consider the finality. Scripture records 9 individuals that were raised from the dead back to life, plus the unspecified number of saints that were raised after the resurrection of Christ himself. And in none of those instances, I went back and looked at each one of those, was there a plea by family or kin for restoration of life? None of those. The only possible exception was the story I just read. Martha's comment in verse 22, "But I know that even now whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee." What was she asking for? What was she trying to say? I'm not exactly sure. Because when Jesus responded to her, "Thy brother shall live again," she right away starts talking about the resurrection. So I'm not sure what Martha was asking for there, but it's very possible that she was not necessarily thinking of restoration of life in this sense. So we recognize death as a final parting. And so to those we love, that unrecoverable final loss brings grief. So why did Jesus weep when Lazarus died? He knew that this was not the final closure. He knew this was not final. He was intending to bring him back to life. So why did Jesus weep? Well, that's the third point. Number three, grief is the price of love. Somewhere on the globe, a person died this morning. In fact, more than one. It's estimated that about 150,000 people die every day across the globe. So as of 10 o'clock this morning, approximately 62,500 people already died across the globe. How many of those have we mourned? None. Probably none of them, because we don't know them. As Christians, we have a measure of love, but yet, not knowing the person, not being close to them, it's a totally different, or very different level of love. Joe's question in the Sunday school class about levels of obedience, and I had to think about this as I'm talking about levels of grief and levels of love. But there is different levels of love that we have, and the greater the love, then the greater the loss and the grief. In the classic book, A Christmas Carol, tells the story of Ebenezer Scrooge and his pitiful life, I guess I may call it that, and the happenings that come into him to show him who he was, and the one thing that came to him that showed him his future. And he saw his future, and he saw a grave, and he saw no one at his grave. In fact, he saw people celebrating his death. He realized the sad truth that no one is mourning him. And in this story, this is what finally helps to bring him to his senses. If you've never read the book, probably that doesn't quite make sense to you. But if you have, it is an interesting thought, how that thought that no one cared that he died was what seemed to bring him to his senses. Two quotes here. These were anonymous sources. I'm not sure who the credit was to give. Grief is the last act of love we can give to those we loved. Where there is deep grief, there was great love. Grief, I've learned, is just love. It's all the love you want to give but cannot. All that unspent love gathers up in the corners of your eyes, the lump in your throat, and in that hollow part of your chest. Grief is just love with no place to go. So Jesus wept, verse 35. And verse 36 records this. Then said the Jews, "Behold how he loved him." I thought that was significant. They recognized this, that love was a key part in understanding grief. Number four, grief is a human response to an event that is out of our control. Death is outside our control. We understand that. But things we can control limit or extend our level of grief, if we can control it. Back to my missing hard drive. He still feels a measure of control. What if he buys the landfill? Maybe he can go in there and find it. And the greater the sense of able to control what's happening limits grief. And grief to things that are outside our control intensifies it. I believe Jesus related to the death of Lazarus here both as a man and as God. He realized the death of his friend, the pain it caused the two sisters and the others that had gathered around, and he wept as a man, as a mortal human does when a loved one dies. I do not believe Jesus wept because he felt out of control, but you know what, many times we do. When there are circumstances that are outside our control, a loss of something that's outside our control, something that's important to us, a natural human response is to weep. John 10, verse 18, speaking of his own life, Jesus said, "No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have the power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again." Jesus is exercising his deity here. He was not out of control, but we are, aren't we? We cannot control death or life. We lose something that we consider of incalculable value, and we can do nothing to change it, and it brings grief. And again, you can apply this in a lot of very different areas of life, not just the loss of a loved one. And I want you just to think about that. And young people, middle age, those of you that maybe haven't been touched by death quite as much, you will be touched by things that you lose. And I'm not talking about just the stuff of this world. I'm talking about things deeper than that. And you will deal with grief. The mourners at the house of Jairus' daughter were weeping and bewailing her death. Jesus came in and said, She's just sleeping. And the mourners there laughed into scorn, it says. They knew she was dead. But Jesus had the power to raise her up. Mary and Martha grieved Lazarus' death, never, I believe, expecting to see Lazarus alive again on this earth. They had no control over their brother's death, and so they grieved, and neither do we. You know, we may remove life support at times. Those decisions come. And I've been involved with one of those, and that is not easy. That is difficult. But I want you just to remember, if you're ever faced with that question, life and death is still not ours. We may make the decision to remove life support, but death is still in the hands of God. We perhaps, as humans, deal with the question of whether we're causing death, or whether we're bringing that death, but I do not believe we are. Mention this, I'll try to get through this, but thinking of my father-in-law, when we had to make that decision with him, and we expected after life support was withdrawn, that we were there as a family, we expected in a few minutes to see him pass away. But instead he sat up and started talking and lived for, I think it was close to 24 hours, maybe a little more than that afterwards. It just reminded me that life and death is not in my hands. Not in our hands. It's in God's hands. Number five, grief has no timetable. You know, we grieve differently. Some people grieve openly. Some pretend to be more quiet about it. Some want to just try to forget it and push it aside. And I'm not I'm not planning this morning to look at each of those different ways of grief and the right and wrongs and pros and cons of them. But we do grieve differently. One author wrote this. He said, wrote, 6 weeks after my wife's death, our children and their maternal grandmother were sitting around the kitchen table when she said, this is a grandmother about her daughter, to her grandchildren, we all need to get over this and just move on now. My oldest son, not yet 20, said, Grandma, we will move on, but right now I'm going to go on missing Mom. You know, telling a grieving person to just get over it is not going to end nor heal the grieving process. A grieving person is just likely to take their grief undercover and let it fester. We grieve differently. I read a story recently about a older couple that passed away, and this is a story told from the eyes of the coroner that was there, and she just mentioned how, you know, I think the husband was preparing a meal for his wife, and went up to take it to her. She hadn't been feeling well and found her in bed, and she had already gone. She had already fled, and he spent his time sharing about all the joys that they had as a couple over the years, and it seemed like he was satisfied. We don't all grieve the same way. Jesus wept when he was faced with the grief of the death of Lazarus. And I believe he shed real tears. I believe he did. I believe he shed real tears. We need not fear to show emotions and tears in times of grief. Tears and crying is the language of grief, and it is the language of love. Don't forget that. It is the language of grief and the language of love. And it is a necessary part of the healing process. We need not fear to show emotions, and I guess I'm mostly looking at this side of the house. Because we as men like to be stoic and we don't like to show emotions so much, but it's okay. When Paul was getting ready to leave to go to Rome, it says in Acts 20, it says they all wept sore and fell on Paul's neck and kissed him, sorrowing most for all the words which he spake, that they should see his face no more. They weren't ashamed to show it. Grief hurts. Grief has its own timetable. However, I do want to say here too that we must recognize the sovereign hand of God in our grief and in our times of loss. And we must be willing to accept death and grief as the will of Almighty God. After Job's calamity, it says he arose, rent his mantle, shaved his head, and fell down upon the ground and worshipped. And said, Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He accepted this as God's will. And I think that's a necessary part of the healing process of grief, is to accept this as God's will. It's a necessary part of the journey. 1 Thessalonians 5:4-13 instructs us that we sorrow not as others which have no hope. Number 6, grief requires company. Grief requires company. When Jesus faced the cross, and Peter, James, and John, he asked them, come with me. I'm exceeding sorrowful. Could you just come watch with me? But they fell asleep. In their humanity, they fell asleep. I don't think they understood the intensity of the sorrow and grief that Jesus was dealing with. They didn't realize the momentous hour that was upon Jesus, and they fell asleep. And we can almost hear the sadness in Jesus' voice when he says, you know what, couldn't you at least stick with me for 1 hour? Even Jesus, even the creator of the earth, wanted company with him in his times of sorrow. It's always not always easy to know what to say to a grieving person, but if you don't know what to say, then don't say anything. It's okay. Just be there. Usually the fact of your presence means more than any words you will say anyhow. I had to think, I remember as a youth, still at home when my mother passed away, and the support of my friends meant so much. Many of them reached out in various ways, came to the viewing, some couldn't make it to the viewing, called me, or messaged, well, I don't know, I guess we didn't message much back then. Regardless, a lot of them went out of their way to just show that they cared. I don't remember what a single one of them said to me. I don't remember a single word, but I remember that they were there. You know, they could have, the evening of the viewing, many of them showed up for that. You know, they could have had fun playing volleyball. They could have had fun on a lot of other things. They could have done fun things, but instead they went to the house of grief. I remember how my father would enjoy company after that, and how sad he was when the company would leave and he was alone again. Well, there's grieving families, there's grieving people all around us, and this could be death of a loved one. This could be grief in various different stages, various different areas. Not just death of a loved one, but loss of other things. Let's support those that we know of, that we're aware of, and be there. And I'm speaking to myself here too. It's something I can do better at as well. But it's my encouragement to all of you. And we have a grieving family this week, one of our own. Will you support and be there for them? And not only just this week, but in the days to come. Back to Jesus. Isaiah 53 verse 3 says, He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. It's not comfortable, not fun being around somebody that's grieving. But Jesus is acquainted with grief, and he will be there, and he will support us, and he will sustain us. He hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Verse 4. All because of his love for us. Psalm 23:4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. I'm thankful this morning for the presence of God in my life through times of grief, and wherever you are in your journey of life, whatever aspects of grief maybe you have dealt with or maybe you're dealing with now, that you can allow Jesus to walk with you through that pain. He knows. He too is acquainted with grief. But that's not also just deal with the grief in our own life, but that's one of the best ways of healing through grief is to reach out to others that are also grieving. And I will leave you with that thought. Let's kneel for prayer.